democracy as an idea is not an Islamic idea. It's a Greek idea. Now, it became universal in the urge of people, in its attractiveness, and et cetera, as a political system of modern states. So we should call it democracy. Now, it would be my hope that we will call them Arab democracies or Islamic democracies in the future, when we have Islamic democracies. But the idea itself to call it Islamic, I'm always afraid of trying to use this term to smuggle undemocratic ideas to this and call it democracy. Of course, I don't believe that there is a problem of Islam with democracy. I don't think there is anything in Islam as such which is against democracy. There are certain patterns of religiosity of Islam, certain interpretation of Islam that bring it into antagonism or contradiction with democracy. But I don't think Islam as such cannot be a democracy. Why? I mean, what's the difference? Islam or Christianity or Judaism, I think they have the same theological source. I don't believe that these are different civilizations. And I don't like these essential descriptions of things according to identities. So I think the mistake was calling them Western democracies. This is a mistake. Actually, they are not Western anymore. Concerning justice and democracy, historical context is here very important. Democracies, especially in the case of the United States, Australia, were built on injustices. We are speaking about genocides. In this case, not just injustices is a modest word for genocide. In the context of the discourse which was prevailing at that time, what is a human being? Certain people were not considered even human being. And the terms of the framework for the functioning of democracy and justice in it is for what a certain civilization at that time, or certain culture or hegemonial discourse considered human being. Now, of course, these are sources of huge historical deficiencies that democracy will carry to the end of times. It won't get rid of this. But the historical fact is that no human discourse today put other humans outside the category of human beings. So you can't today say, I am for justice, but not for the Palestinians. You can't anymore say, you can think, but you can't say, and this is very important, that this, I do believe that hypocrisy is much easier than fascism, unlike radicals who think that the most dangerous thing is hypocrisy. I think hypocrisy sometimes is great, that people don't say what they think. Because I think it's very dangerous when you go around saying that justice is okay, but not for the Palestinians. No, I want you to say justice and for the Palestinians so they can have a dialogue with you. You're outside the dialogue circle. So in our world today, you can't say anymore justice, but for these races, no, because they are not considered human beings for me. Now, in the framework of what they thought is a human being, they did think of just and fair, and they believed in what they think. In that sense, these races, in the relationship, not only to the native people, but also to women, in the relationship to women, in the relationship to people with another color, they believed that they are outside the circle of thinking about justice at all. I think a real shift happened in the 20th century after two world wars, that in the hegemonial discourses that we have in our world, nobody can see this or use this anymore, and I want to take advantage of this. So this is a revolutionary change in history, that today you can't say, I want to make a democracy in Algeria, for example, but only for the educated male Algerians who finished their graduate school at least. And the rest will not have voting rights. You could say that in the 19th century. And you could speak in terms of justice and democracy like this. Today you can't say it and be just. The weak and the oppressed in the world can take advantage of it. In that sense, a huge change happened in the Western civilization that we underestimate. Because of our critical edge, because of the injustices that are still there, but the fact that the issue of justice is so universal on the level of discourse, this is a revolutionary change. It needed many world wars and a lot of genocides until we reached this. If you really want to live in a democratic system, your struggle is not finished by 40% of the society going to the ballots every 4 years. I mean different things totally when I speak about democracy. I speak about participation, social conditions that enable you to participate, which means social rights. my understanding of liberal democracy is totally opposed to neoliberal approach, which is now the new enemy inside democracy, not the fundamentalisms, but a tendency which is ready to move the democratic society without 30% of the society, homeless, poor, outside the circulation, outside the market, unable to consume even, etc. And I don't know if you follow, but actually what we get in the third world in the form of export schools of democracy usually come from the neoliberals, and their allies in the Middle East are usually the neoliberals. If you take the Arab regimes now, the people who are the best partners and the most sincere partners of this tendency of the new cons are the neoliberals of the Arab world, who are ready really for prophets to walk on bodies, on dead bodies. And many of them are the second generation of the same ruling elites in the Arab world, mostly sons of kings and presidents, etc., who are now being qualified to rule, in most cases, from dictatorships and undemocratic kingdoms and sheikhdoms, etc., who carry now from the West neoliberal thoughts and ready to work with the new kinds in certain reforms, but in certain limits that can keep the political power and the economic power in the country. So I think that these are the coming problem in the so-called export of democracy in the Arab world, these people.
Would you support the immediate American withdrawal from Iraq today? And if so, what would be a viable alternative to prevent the whole country from disintegrating?
Concerning the disintegration and the withdrawal of the United States from Iraq, of course, I don't even accept the idea that now they cannot withdraw because of all the mess that they made, they can't now withdraw. I don't accept that because I think the longer they stay, the mess will deepen. It will be even worse. And there should be another international or Arab transitionary period in Iraq until this state is reinstated. You know, this disintegration and this bloody pattern of disintegration can spread. I did not have time, of course, in my lecture to explain to you the whole historical background of the production of these states, how they were produced by agreements between officers, you know, how the line was drawn, and in certain cases it divided families, not only tribes and religions. And the fact that Shiites and Sunnis, in certain cases, are from the same tribes, just in the south they became Shiites, on the north they are Sunnis. And the fact that this politicization of sectarian affiliation in Iraq is a product of the Iraq-Iran war, actually, which was totally supported by the United States and the Gulf states. There's a huge historical background for all this. Until now, I think, the American hand was not constructive in that sense. In all what we mean when we speak about nationality and national affiliation as a modern affiliation, which brings individual in direct relationship with the state, with the modern institutions, instead of organic, pre-modern collectives like the tribe or like the sect or like the religion. I don't understand why is America friendly to nationalities all around the world, except to Arab nationality, and why we have to say Kurds on the one hand, which is an ethnic national identity, and Shiites and Sunnites on the other hand, instead of saying Arabs. Why Arabs are defined religiously while Kurds nationally? I don't understand why. And I think 200 million Arabs don't understand why. I mean, there's something very hostile here in the relationship. And I think this is deepening and it will continue. There are Kurds on the one hand, and not Arabs on the other, the majority, but Shiites and Sunnites. And in Syria, we will have 15 sects. And some of us, you know, Arab conspiracy theory, you know. Some of us who tend to think in terms of conspiracies think that this is a conspiracy. That America wants to divide the Arab nation, etc. And you know, simple people, you can't blame them for this. They think that, theologically, that things have goals. That United States cannot be doing this because it's dumb or because they don't understand what's going on because of stupidity. Or they have to understand that such a superpower has super goals. For example, to disintegrate or to divide, whatever. People think like this, conspiratively. And I think Americans would think this way. For example, they think that terrorists sit somewhere and conspire against the United States. You know? They make conspiracies with all kinds of regimes. You know, the rogue regimes that are conspiring with the terrorists everywhere and breeding terrorism is again a conspiracy against our way of life, you know. And they are against us because of what we are. You know, there is international conspiracy, you know. And these mutual conspiracy theories are going to bring us only to catastrophes if the situation continues like this in the United States, involvement in Iraq. People are becoming more and more anti-American. All kinds of polls have been conducted and surveys to try to verify this Bush thesis, they are against us because of what we are. You know, this is a genial sentence. And all the polls proved that he's wrong, including of American institutions. You know, global attitude surveys, etc., etc. Shows that most of the Arabs are not against American way of life or American values, they're against American policies. Palestine, policy in Iraq, etc. Most of the Arabs think that democracy is okay, until now. If you make a survey, you will find most of the Arabs think that democracy can be adopted in Islamic countries. Most of the Arabs would answer that, and they are answering that in all the surveys, including the surveys conducted from the United States about the Arab world. Most of the Arabs think that there's no problem with democracy. There's a problem with their regimes. Most of them think that their regimes are bad and that the United States is a friend of their regimes. You know, the American policy now is reaching a dangerous phase in the history of Iraq, where the idea, which is a very good idea, not a bad idea at least in the history of democracy, which is the federal idea, is imposed in a sectarian way in Iraq, so that you have not a federalism of districts, which is an administrative federalism, which is okay for any democratic constitution, nor is it a federalism of nationalities. Again, it's a modern kind of federalism like the Belgium, or lingual federalism like the Swiss. All these are kind of modern, or federalism of modern societal units. But the United States is bringing something, is breeding, if you want, something very dangerous in the history of political regimes, federalism of tribes. Federalism of religions. This cannot produce democracy. This can only produce a civil war and disintegration. And it's happening now in the Constitution. You can't bring together the idea of federalism with pre-modern entities. Either it is totally formal district federalism, which does not change much for the life of the individual and his right to choose what he is and where he wants to live, which is the way in the rest of the United States, except in the case of Texas and Hawaii. Federalism is okay, district federalism, decentralization. This is a theory, this is okay, constitution, democratic constitution can endure it and live with it. But federalism of sects, this means civil war, can't mean anything else. Because it does not presuppose citizens, but four citizens, you know, four sects, these are the four citizens in the country. All the rest are just members, affiliates in this unit. And this has the tendency of producing religious leaderships. You can't for a long time hold secular leadership of religious groups. The natural thing is that the leaders of religious groups are priests or shaykhs. This is the most natural thing. And this is what's going to happen. As against the Ayatollahs, you will have the Sunni shaykhs. The secular politicians will be just a transitionary phase. They will vanish. That's what the United States is producing these days in Iraq. I think the sooner they go out, the better. But I couldn't explain every theory I have about American relationship to Arab nationalism, especially secular Arab nationalism, and the fact that some of the wings, if you want, in American foreign policy already make some self-criticism concerning the relationship of preferring Islam as a political ideology, not as a religion, against secular Arab nationalism in the 50s and the 60s. They already think about it, and there are already some published critiques from the inside the American establishment concerning their attitudes in the 60s and 70s against Nasserism, Ba'athism, etc. Especially taking into consideration that Arab secular nationalism was not anti-American, it was anti-British. It was anti-French, but it was certainly not anti-American. On the contrary, it looked for coalitions with the United States. It was begging for cooperation with the United States against the French and the British in the 50s. And when the United States said no, Arab secular nationalism turned to the Soviet Union. It was not socialist in its structure, nor in its ideology. These are historical choices that the United States consciously made. Again, Israeli irrationalism here, or the irrational attitude of the United States affected by its alliances to Israel, etc. But again, I think here discussing Orientalism is important, and the effect of Orientalism on policy decision-making in empires, especially in the case of the United States, the inability of decision-maker in early phases to understand that you can have modernist, secular Arab speaking with you with your own language. Uneasiness of the Western culture to accept this. And the looking always for the authentic Arab who's a Bedouin, who's conservative. I suggest you to discuss the discourse of authenticity. What does it mean? Why is this urge always for to look for the authentic? And who is the authentic? And why can't you be secular, modern, and authentic? Why do you have to be backward, reactionary, anthropological subject in order to be authentic? You can't be a partner. You can't be an equal partner. You are a subject. You are an object of research. There is a problem with Arab secular nationalism because it tried to come with pride. With pride, as you know, it has sometimes this caricature way. Pride in its first phases, trying to reassert national pride as against colonialism. Sometimes it looks funny. And you have these colorful figures of Arab nationalists in the 50s and 60s. Sometimes they are funny. One of them is still alive, you know. Sometimes it is. But in general, it is uneasy. There is this discontent with the secular modernist Arab. When he becomes a liberal democrat Arab, he's really annoying. Because you start, you know, discussing justice and civil rights and etc. The World Islamic Congress was formed in a premeditated way against Nasserism. America decided with Saudi Arabia to produce the Islamic Congress against Arab nationalism, secular nationalism in the 60s. So you can imagine the relationship here. Arab unity, the idea of Arab unity. Again, one of the major arguments which is said in the Israeli and the American university, but usually I heard it in the Israeli universities before, is the idea that there was never an Arab nation, an Arab nationality. As if there was always a Jewish nationality. And we have to accept that, you know, that the Arabs are not nationality, but Jewishness is. And suddenly, you become unhistoric. Suddenly, you become very ideological. Suddenly, mysticism controls or dominates in the academic discourse, forgetting that nations and nationalities are in general modern phenomena, and that nations and nationalities are produced, are constructed. They are made, they are man-made phenomena. And usually they were made after the 17th century. This is in the early nations, the so-called normal early nationalities which had normal path of development, which is the early capitalist societies that started with the absolute monarchies. And that there are late nations like the German one, like the Italian. They are also made by very strong unification movement with a lot of bloodshed. From 300 states, you make one state. You produce nationalities. And Arab nationality is also produced, like the rest, like the French. It was also produced with a lot of bloodshed against the Bretons. And like lately, Zionism tried to turn the Jewish religious diaspora of holy communities that, well, it's an ancient people. Of course, it's an ancient people. But all peoples were religions. All religions were people once in the antique. In that sense, the Jews were not an exception. But then the tendency to retroactively impose nationalism on Jewish history as if all nations are modern except the Jews, they were always a nation. They were a people like all the people. Yes, they were a people, not just a religion. But no religion was just a religion. Every religion was a people once. Now, the fact that you nationalized this sacred community, you needed a secular national movement to do it. It's called Zionism. And it was not produced in Palestine, but in Europe. And the Arab nationalism went to the same schools like Zionism, which is European nationalism. But the endeavors, the efforts, the huge efforts, cultural, political, etc., of Arab nationalism were defeated by British and French interests in the region in coalition, in very strong alignments with traditional pre-national leaderships, tribal usually, against secular nationalism. Since that time, Western colonialism in the region was against progress, was usually a lie of traditional pre-modern forces against modernist forces. This is the situation. It is very deep. It is too deep for people who hold these ideas to claim that they are for democracy in the Middle East. Nobody will believe them. Nobody. Their history with reactionary Arab movements and conservative and authenticity and tradition and religion is too long to be believed that they are suddenly Democrats now. Khalas, huh? Enough. We can't solve the whole region's problems today.